We are not, we don't dare even to take the magnifying glass. First, we want to know what's the entire, the surface picture, and what's the meaning, and what's the story, and the message of the surface picture. Are you following that? It is the opposite. To know the, the message of the entire story, the way it's told.
Does that just apply to Bereshit or the whole book of Bereshit?
No, it applies to Bereshit, not to the whole book of Bereshit. We'll come to it. But on the other hand, parts of it, I can learn. A Rashi, a surprising Rashi. If you learn the Parshit, and by the end of the creation, the second stop, the repetition of the creation of the human being, and then comes in the story with the snake. Huh? And then by the end it says that Hashem made for them some garments that they can wear. Remember this? And Rashi says that this statement that Hashem made for them garments should have been before the story with this. For some reason it's not. And I'm wondering, because before it says they could run around naked. They were running around naked. And it didn't bother them. You follow? And when somebody reads the Chumash, he thinks, because of that need that they have to cover themselves, Hashem gave them garments. Rashi says no. And when you look at the Rashi, and there is a message. It is true that our clothing gives us protection. Protection from cold, a protection from heat. It's true. It's true that our clothing is adding in, especially in the post Adam and Eve era, it's already adding to our sexual distance. Is that right? But it seems that clothing is another function. When you are going to a reception, and the reception expects you, black tie, and to be formally dressed. When you are formally dressed, you are not dressed just for protection or for decency. It is it is a decoration of your personality. You know that? You know that clothing is decoration, decorates the personality and blends with the person. The same as a camera can pick up different phases of a face. You know that, huh? Which means that what we are, how we look, is a complex, and sometimes the camera picks up just one phase of it. Are you familiar with this? Huh? The same thing, our eye also picks up the same. Our inner eye You know what I mean now? Inner Chaim? Huh? We have information. Oh, and a very simple thing. Recognizing handwriting. Recognizing signatures. Now, today, machines are picking up checks and documents, but not long ago, it was the teller at the bank who had to recognize whether the signature is right, and he compared it with a card. You know that. How many signatures had a bank teller to see during a day? Could he really explain how he recognizes a signature? He can't. But he still recognizes it. This is the inner eye. I'm trying to figure out how to explain this. What we know is one thing. What we can explain to others is a different thing. In order to explain, I have to use a language. And it's possible that I know more than I have a vocabulary in my language. But I know it.
How is that?
Huh?
How is that? We think with the vocabulary that we have. I don't think
let me give you an example. Can you give me a definition? What is way? A road. What is a way? There is a way between here, let's say, and Virginia. It's a way to go. A fellow has a way in life, a way of life. And somebody has a very difficult problem, and he just discovered a way how to solve it. There, how many uses they have for the expression way? What really is the concept of way? And it's not a coincidence, because in every language it's the same. Derech, huh?
It's a process,
same thing. Huh?
Process, a method of getting from one thing to another.
Fine. That's the definition. So the definition is the distance that we have to cover between the point where I am and the point which I want to reach.
Or the method.
Huh?
Or the method.
The method is the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. Now, tell me, here are 100 people, and I asked you, what percentage of those 100 people will make use of the word way correctly? And then I'll ask you again, what percentage of those 100 people will be able to give you the definition? Which percentage is larger? The people who know how to use it, or the people who know to explain how to use it?
Huh?
The people who know how to use it is much larger. How did they know when they can't explain it? So, which means that there is knowledge And there is also the ability to explain my knowledge, the ability to translate my knowledge in a language. The same as we have a language, we have also a language of thought. And there may be many informations which we have which we cannot even get to our language of thought. Is it clear what I'm saying? Huh? The same thing is with our eye. I can describe what I see, and what is more important are the things I cannot describe when I see them. I cannot describe the difference between 500 signatures. Very hard. But my eye sees it and recognizes it. And what is even more, motivation is in that inner eye and inner information, where you don't have to think. When you drive, if you will have to, each and every move, you'll have to make a decision. Now I step on the gas. Now I step on the brake. Now I turn the wheel. It'll be a hazard. You'll be a disaster on this. It becomes automatic. Isn't it? Huh? It becomes... You drive already by reflexes. It's the truth, huh? Mm-hmm. So it seems that the inner knowledge, or whatever call it, the subconscious, is really the one which we are using in actual life. The rest is information for our brain.
Huh? I don't see. What's this with the checks again? With the signature? What's the point of that?
The point is that if somebody would place for you 500 different signatures, and you'll be able to recognize whether you have a card file with people who sign, you'll be able to recognize. But if somebody would ask you to analyze what is that way of writing different than the other way of writing, it's too fine that you should be able to analyze. You can analyze 10 signatures. Handwritings will see it more. How many forms do you have to write one letter? What you can imagine.
Let's see. If you have these cards, you have these cards, and they have all these checks. So I see that this person writes like this, and the card matches. I do that with all the cards, 1,000, a million cards, whatever card you give me. I can see that this looks like this, and this looks like this. I can see that this doesn't look like this.
Sure, you can see. But you cannot tell me, if you want to teach me, you remember all those signatures, and you train me, and you tell me, his signature has lines in that direction, his signature has lines in that direction. How many signatures can you explain me? To me?
By memory, you think?
Yes. Not only by memory. You look at them and I don't see them. And you are training me, and tell me and you describe me. How many could you?
I could do one, you could do them all, no?
You can do them all?
Why not?
You've got to try and explain to the person who can't see the signatures the style of the writing so that when he sees them he can recognise them. You haven't got the vocabulary possible to explain to the other guy 500 different types of signatures they're writing so that he'll be able to recognise them just from your description.
The thing is that by the limitation of human perception of humans, you multiply it in millions of times, and then you have your limitations of understanding divinity. But it's along the same line. Now, remember I mentioned it. You know, we are talking to each other. We never saw each other. You know that? Do you know that?
What?
We never saw each other.
Who?
Me and you.
When did we never see each other?
Because why do you think? Who are you? Your nose? Your beard?
No,
I am talking to your personality.
I always thought he was his nose.
Huh?
I always thought he was his nose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. He should keep his nose out of trouble. Is it what I'm saying?
We never saw each other as far as...
We are communicating. Mm-hmm. It's not our nose is communicating. It's we are communicating.
Okay.
Huh? But we never saw each other. And the mirror helped me to see myself. What we really are is something which is non-tangible. So therefore I say the limitations which we have in the conceptions of humans multiplied in the millions and millions of times gives us an image of the limitations of our conception of the Creator. That's what I'm saying. Now, I don't know what brought me to the inner eye.
You're talking about the clothes.
So, and the inner eye blends the person with his dress and is picking up a certain phase of that man. And this may be a very important element of dress. While I am dressing for Shabbos, I am wearing Shabbos dress. I am not picking out my Shabbos dress for protection. I decorate myself for Shabbos, right? But while I have them, they protect me too. It's part of the dignity of the human being. Forget about decency, about sexuality, about practical uses of clothing. Part of the dignity of the human being is his dress. And when the human being was created, the next step was to give him a dress. And this is what Rashi is saying. And this is what Rashi is saying, that it should have been written immediately after his creation about dress. For some reason, it was interrupted the story. Now, this is not the general image of the person. This is just picking out, reading one phrase. You follow? In Breishis, I cannot read the general picture. Because the general picture is much too abstract.
Abstract in what sense? Other than...
Abstract? I'll tell you what it's
abstract. Okay. Try to define what abstract is.
Huh?
As far as Breishis.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll there are different kinds of abstract.
I was starting, last time, I was starting about the Seder Satura, hidden part of the Torah. Remember? We came at that time to a conclusion, if you still remember, that it's possible that those are questions which no human mind can answer. But on the other hand, if the answer is given to us, some humans can understand it. Do you remember we spoke about it? Mm-hmm. Why? Why some humans? Because it's a question, it's also a question of abstractions. All thinking goes through the imagination. Any idea that I examine has a certain image in my mind, and that image I examine. I don't know how to explain it. Understanding, really studying a subject, is contemplation. What is contemplation? Contemplation is, if I am taking an object and I examine it very minutely from all sides, this is contemplation. And then, maybe if there are cracks, if I look from the far, I would notice them. When I take it, a very careful examination, slowly, I'm not... Then I may discover cracks, I may discover all kinds of things, right? Exactly the same as thinking. Thinking is taking an object under the eye of our brains and contemplate it, and then we are finding out. And sometimes we overlook. I'll tell you something. My father, Bechayim Baruch, told me. He says, what is a genius? He says, a genius is not the one who can build intellectual skyscrapers. He says, a genius tells you things which are very simple. Simple. Everybody can say. He says, somebody comes in with a question. And Miss Madeline says, somebody comes in with a question. Nobody knows how to answer. Comes the genius, he says, and he tells you an answer. And everybody is embarrassed. Why didn't we say it? It's so simple. I'll give you an illustration. I think that illustration comes from Chaim Brisker. I think so. Somebody comes in and says, he was in a city, he saw that there are two blind people who have a brother who has no brothers. That's possible. If you know, don't say it. You can write it to me, though. Don't say it.
What's the question?
Again, he came to a city, and he found over there two blind people who have a brother, and that brother has no brothers. Yeah, there's
the two blind people, you said. You said two blind people.
Right.
The women.
Right.
There's also something like that more contemporary about... there's a more contemporary one. How's it called?
Surgery.
Yeah, it's a surgery. Something about your son. What is it?
What happened? You said it.
Well, yeah.
The average people don't find it. You know why?
I'll tell you why.
Because when I am asked a question, I contemplate the material, the element which is given, and I am trying to find out where there's an opening. But if by listening to you, I added color to what you said, I am looking at it already with the color that I painted it. And if, when you hear two blind people, you think about two men, you will never get out of that, of the circle of men, of the male circle. Now, the genius is the one who catches the element before painting it himself. Then it comes out very simple. But then there is something else. I just wanted to illustrate you that it's really examination. The same thing is you can do a physical examination, you can do a mental examination. But in you have to have an image of what you're handling. Now, you remember I was talking about mathematical symbols. If you cannot imagine mathematical symbols, some meaning for them, you cannot handle them. Neither maybe things which are more intangible than a group of numbers, a group of figures. And now when it comes to creation, it's very intangible. Now we have the human being is intangible. We cannot imagine but the human being. You follow? Now all the story that is told to us in
the same as an Adam?
Huh?
You said a human being, is it the same as an Adam with that name, label Adam? You said we can't imagine a human being.
Right.
Can we imagine an Adam?
No. But still in atom, we have some mathematical formula for it. Mm-hmm. We have no mathematical formula for the human being.
And what's the formula for atom?
Huh?
I think you said atom, not atom.
Adam.
Oh, you're talking about
not
Adam.
Adam. You have an atom.
No, Adam. No, I thought you were talking about an atom. Adam is a human being.
So then we can't imagine.
So, no, we can't. Now the only thing, in Bracious I can tell you that we have side lessons, but the central is matched to an intangible. I'll give you another side lesson. The fourth day of the creation. It says, the Creator said, let there be luminaries. And those luminaries should be for time. They should tell you years and days and months. And they also should give you light. What is more important? A time measuring device or light? What is more important?
Longer.
Pardon?
Longer.
Light is more important. Il Chumash is secondary. First, the luminaries are a device for measuring time. You know, we measure time only by the planets. You know that. Huh? What's a day, what's a year, what's a month? They're all measured by the movement of the planets, right? Very convenient. But light is more important, no? The Chumash has it reversed. Has time measuring first and light after. Why?
We need to see things in time and space. Maybe more than...
I'll tell you. Very simple. What is time to a human being?
It denotes it denotes a creation. I mean, if you have time, you have to have the aspect of space. Because the planets have to move.
I'm not that philosophical. Very simple. Time is life. Because what does a man, a person, a human being have in his life more than time? A minute passed, that minute is not coming back. A minute passed, a part of his life is gone. A person has his ration. Time has been rationed to us. This is the importance of time. The American says time is money. Time is more than money, time is life. Now, the American language has it. They are talking about killing time, right? It's murder. That's why it precedes light. It's life itself. In Talmud you have it, in Gemara. You have it. The Brocha of Shechiyonah. You know the Brocha of Shechiyonah? Huh? Things that you do periodically. You thank Hashem for having given you life. Shechiyonah, Vekiyimonu, Yigonu, the one who kept us alive to this moment. The Gemara calls that Brocha Zman, time. That's the thank you that we owe the Creator for time. Because time and life is equal. It's called Zman. Now, this is a side lesson which you can learn in Brachos. But if you want to learn how the luminaries were created, that's a different story. You have to be ready for it. When you go on with Brachos, you have constantly side lessons. But the central lesson, we are not prepared. When you come further in Chumash, you can pick up the central lessons. And then, if you find some side lessons, fine. Did I answer you? Huh?
How do you get ready for
it? What are you prepared?
Pardon?
How do you get ready for it?
That's like a... Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you prepare yourself?
By learning. And now, and the Rambam says, that's very interesting. The Rambam says that the more is the device for it. I wish, let me take a look whether you have here a Rambam. Just to make a short statement and say that the entire rule of good and bad behavior is exactly this. Everything which is created, everything which exists has a normal function, has a natural function. If I use it for its function, it's good behavior. If I use it If I use, I'll come to it.
The right one?
Yeah. The right. The one on top. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. But you have to come to it.
I know which book to get me.
So, if you want, this really has to have some time to explain. But to tell you in short, the same as right and wrong behavior with that tape recorder would be the function is sound. Use it for sound and don't use it as a hammer. That's exactly in the entire creation, the entire universe. Things are designed for purposes. And if you use them for their purpose, that's good behavior. If you use them for different things, it's damaging behavior. Take a paper knife and cut a piece of wood with it. You'll spoil the knife, you'll spoil the wood, and you'll waste your energy. And this is starting a cycle, because then you want to use the wood in furniture, and your furniture is going to limp. And it's going to break things. This is starting a cycle. Now the question is, how do I know what is right and what is wrong? How do I know? If I live thousands of years, I will still not be able to learn nature and know exactly what's the function of things. And as a matter of fact, my man said that the intelligence of a person can be measured by the amount of functions he can explain to things which exist. Can you explain to me a certain insect, why we need it? There are some of them that we know. Huh? Some of them we don't. Now, so how do we go through life? And this, I have an interesting illustration which give you a motion point. Imagine there was a pilot strike. By the way, today was a strike at the airports. All airports had a strike. Not by the airline people, but the people who are working at the airports.
The whole world?
Huh?
The whole world?
No!
In Ben Gurion.
Not in Ben Gurion, and they have other airports here. They're on strike. Jerusalem is also an airport, you know that. For IKEA, for the legal. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a strike. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have especially a socialist country. The likes is like the Catholic state. I was going to pay for my gas bill, and I had a reason to pay the gas company, so I went this week, and I killed ahead for morning to go to the bus gas, and I'm coming. We are on strike today. That's the country here. But anyway. Imagine there is a pilot strike, and the company has to fly planes. So they invented a device. Somebody writes a schedule, an exact schedule, when to push that button, when to pull that lever, and so on and so on. He writes a schedule for 3 hours flight. Now, if the man is alert, conscientious, he can fly the plane. Now those flights have, the strikes prolonged, and the company is worried because it's really a hazard to fly with such. So they decided the people who are flying the planes now, they'll train them. So they provided them with manuals, and between flights you have to study mechanics, air mechanics, and one day you'll become a pilot. exactly the same is mitzvahs. Because the same as that ignorant pilot doesn't know why he has to push that button. But if he doesn't push it, the plane will go wrong. The same, I don't know why I have to wear tzitzis. And it seems that there is an influence. And the universe needs it. So the only thing, I have a schedule, I follow the schedule. The Torah doesn't want me to be ignorant. So therefore, between mitzvahs, I have the study of Torah. And this way I will, one day I'll be a pilot too. It's even more. I repeat so many times that illustration. It's even more. People in the passenger's cabin don't have any schedules. But,
Passenger's cabin, so I didn't have
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have any schedules. But they have some minimum regulations to put a plane on fire. It seems that the Tayyag mitzvahs, those have been given to the pilots. The Jew has been placed in the cockpit of the world, of the universe. The non-Jew, nobody expects him to bear tzitzis. Nobody expects him to stay away from chametz and pesach. Nobody expects him to sit in the seat. But there are the seven basic rules for all humans, which, by the way, come in the portion of the week of Noach. The seven basic rules are also part in Bereishis. Which, and the basic rules are honesty, no murder, no adultery, no cruelty. And the seven, having courts is one of the rules, and believing in the Creator is one of the rules. Yeah. So it's together seven rules, which are now. This is good. You are not flying the plane, but at least don't place society on fire. And it, does it make sense what you say?
They also have to buy the tickets. Too.
Huh?
They also have to buy tickets.
Yeah. Thank you for serving me a ticket. Yeah. Now I asked him to bring the Rambam, so let me read what the Rambam says. The Rambam is talking about the obligation of study of Torah. And this is an obligation for every Jew to study. And what is interesting, the study of Torah sometimes is very remote from our daily practice. What are you studying here in Esamiach and Gemara today? Cheska Sabbatim. And Cheska Sabbatim are the laws of establishing proof of ownership. Right? It's very remote from my daily practice as a Jew. My daily practice as a Jew takes in character and takes in activity. I picked up this morning, for some reason, I took out the Ahavas Chesed. You know the Ahavas Chesed? Huh? Chofetz Chaim's. And it's full. It is full of teachings. Of teaching me and training me. My character, just for one thing, for consideration for other people. That's what habit stress is. Consideration for other people. Now, this is my daily need to know. Because I'm not alone. I'm always surrounded with other people. What's consideration of my wife? What's consideration of people who are sitting here? Consciously, a person is never isolated. And it's basic consideration of other people. Cheshe Shabbatim doesn't tell you anything about it. That's right. It doesn't tell you how to observe Shabbos. It doesn't tell you how to put on through. It's remote. But the Torah wants us to know it. The Torah wants us to know it, the regulations of the Torah, of the laws of ownership. And not only this, it's not easy to study it. You know, when I, in Gemara, I have the feeling, you know, you're coming into a parking lot and they put some bumps in the, so that you couldn't go faster than 5 miles an hour. You know? Huh? Don't you have the same feeling when you learn Gemara? Huh? Those bumps. Doesn't let you go fast. And there's almost, I cannot remember any shtickel Gemara that I didn't have to stop thinking. The meaning of it. Now, here is what he says. The obligation, really, should be that a person should divide his study in 3 sections. One section, the written law, which is Chumash, and the Prophets. One section should be Mishnah, but Mishnah contains everything, but you have to take it apart. And one section, Gemara, which is taking apart the Mishnah. Now, here is what he says. A person is obligated to divide his time of study in three. One-third, the written law. One-third, the oral law, which is the text of the Mishnah. One-third, to try to understand and figure out the result of things at the beginning already. It means to figure out when you have an idea, you should right away say where it's leading. Is it clear what I say?
Last one.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the last one?
Pardon?
The last, third category.
He says, when you hear an information, you have to figure out where that information is leading up to. I'll tell you an experience that I have, and there was a young boy here that. And I was in the yeshiva of Mir. You heard of Mir Yeshiva? Yeah. The Mashgiach was Rabbi Ruchem Lubavitch, one of the greatest thinkers that we had in that generation. And a great educator. He talks to me and he wants to test my thinking. He says, there are some people who are mixers. What makes them to be mixers? Mira Yeshiva, that
you mean that?
I'll tell you right away. I'm not talking about the kitchen tool. Yeah, I'll tell you. The Mira Yeshiva, the Bismarck, was one big Bismarck, they have here in Bismarck. One big Bismarck, there were 450 Bochum learning. At the same time, everybody was yelling, and everybody was hearing what he says. Now, one fellow has a cash. 5 minutes later, everybody in this class knows already that they asked this. And everybody is trying to figure out an answer. And there is another fellow who has a very something bright. Keeps it for himself. You have to pump him to get something out of it. Now the first fellow is a mix-up, the second not. And he says, what makes a person to be that kind of a mixer, that if he has something, he shares it with everyone. I said, when that what's coming in the container is more than the container can hold. So he says, explain yourself what you mean. So I said, it seems to me that nature is so designed that there are some carpenter work where carpenter parts are locking into each other. Is it clear what I say? Huh?
No.
They have two birds and they have to be together. They can be put together even without nails. If you have grooves and the other one has, I don't know how to call it, like fingers, and they fit in together, so that where there is a need, there is an urge. Are you found? He starts yelling at me. He says, that means what you say.
What do you say?
This is bad, he says. And this is corruption. And keeps on yelling at me. And I don't know, I think I said something logical. And he yells at me. Then, after 5 minutes of calling me all kinds of names, he says, true, he says, the Gemara says, more than the calf, and the calf wants to be nursed, the mother wants to nurse it. It's true. Says, but it doesn't mean that the mother wants to nurse it because it has too much milk. The mother wants to nurse it because it has a natural feeling that a calf needs it. And he says to me, you're a young man. You don't see the difference yet, he says. You go off, you'll find out. And the difference is between Kedusha and Tumah, between sanctity and Tumah. How do you translate Tumah?
Impurity.
He's right. And he was right. It took me years to realize what he said. You know, a Rebbe who comes in to teach his students, and all he is concerned, he has something bright that he has to tell somebody. And here he has fellows who will have to listen to him. He's the biggest bore. And he kills his students. And who is the good teacher? The good teacher who comes in. And he has a feeling what those people need, what the students need. And he gives him what he needs. He doesn't give him because he has to express himself. You follow this? Huh? Now, but it took me years to feel what this is leading, what this is leading. He saw it right away. In the same as you come at a fork at the road. And here one road from the other is only 2 feet away. not when you travel further. The travel distance is many miles, right? And that you should sense right away that this goes right and this goes left. That's what the Rambam said. And he's talking about the intellectually. That the person, when he hears a theory, any theory, he should feel right away where it's leading. Further, should be able to produce one information from another. He should be able to compare things to each other. He should be able to understand the methods of how Torah information is being produced, and so on. And this, the Rambam said, is what we call Gemara. That's his definition of Gemara. Which means that besides everything else, Gemara is being used or is served as a mind grinding tool, as a brain grinding tool.
That's for sure.
Huh?
That's for sure.
That's for sure, right?
All ground up.
Fine. So the more it grinds your brain, the more it prepares you to pick up more non-tangible ideas.
I don't always see that, though, that that's clear.
Huh?
I don't always see that, though, when I don't see that that always follows. That's what you said, that the more you grind your brain, it's the process of the Gemara. It's an aid to thinking in an abstract way.
Oh, I don't know why, but the Gemara takes you and gives you constantly abstract. Let me show you something. You learn something, Reshk Sabbatim, right? Huh? Now, what does it say? It starts that ways of producing proof for ownership of real estate is by having in possession for 3 years. Huh? A little further, you just started, maybe you're not further, a little further. Omer Rabbi Yechon said, so my team, I heard from those who were walking to the school of Usha, where from do I know that that kind of proof is 3 years? Monsieur Ramuel. How do you translate Monsieur Ramuel? A goring axe?
Yeah.
I think the right now. I hope I didn't invite Monsieur Ramuel here. Yeah. So, he said the same as Monsieur Ramuel after he got 3 times. You say that he's a goring axe, the same if he kept 3 years, you say it's his. What's the comparison? What is the logical comparison? You have to think. If you don't think it doesn't make sense. It just does not make sense. Huh? Now, if you start thinking a little, you'll find something. You'll find that when you make experiments, you can never reach a conclusion unless you repeat your experiments. One experiment never proves anything. You know that? Huh? Because each and everything is composed, is a complex of elements. Now, sorry. If you can wait a minute, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it is. Take a glass of coffee on the table, and it's sweet. And somebody tells you, prove me that the sugar makes it sweet. I'll say, no, maybe the coffee made it sweet. But if you have three glasses, one is tea and sugar, the other one is coffee and sugar, the other one is cocoa and sugar, and all three of them are sweet, then I can prove that it's the sugar that makes it sweet.
Could be the water, too.
Huh? Or it could be the water, right. Right.
You have to make
it right. Then I have to make it right. Good. Fine. But in any case, it showed you what I mean. That one isolated. Give me your name, please. Yeah. An isolated case cannot prove anything. You have to repeat it several times. And then you'll find that. Huh? Now, the growing acts is the same thing. You want to know whether he is by nature a tempered ax, or just he had a stomachache that day and he was wild. But he did it three times. And that fellow, somebody was using his property for 3 years. He was using it for a year, Rashi said. He took protest. Why didn't he protest? He had a terrible income tax case, and he couldn't do anything about that piece of life, right? Why did he remain silent the next year?
Yes.
Mother had a lot of trouble. The next year, he had a lot of trouble. It's logical to find the common element. It means the common element to solve it. Here is. Well, the two are going together. You see what I mean? But you cannot learn without thinking.
The part that's not finishing. The first one was from the week before.
Fine.
Okay.
And fine, I'll
on the other side.
Thank you, and I'll send it. Okay. I say goodbye to you.
You going to America?
No. I don't. No, no. I think the name is Dominski from Chadera. He said something from a sefer which is a real jewel, and I want to share it. He said, I want to explain a little, he said it in Vayechi, when Yaakov is calling his sons together, and he tells them, get together and I'll tell you what's going to happen to you at the end of the day. Do you remember that expression? Huh? Ace. Asha Zikolachem, what will happen to you? Rachisayim at end of days. But the word Yikor is not spelled correctly. Because Mikre means something which happens. Krio means a calling. Now when you write what is going to happen to you, you spell it. Put a hay at the end. Each shall put a hay at the end. It is spelled with an aleph at the end, which means which will call you at the end of days. What does it mean? Here the question. He said a beautiful thing. He says, this is a hint of the calling of tshuva at the end of. And he says there is in Gemara, in Kedushin, in Bava Basra, about, are you familiar with Meshicha? The Kinyan Meshicha. Are you familiar with it?
Oh,
huh?
you prove something and the other thing immediately becomes the other person, the other part.
Right, right. Like in acquisition. When it's changed, the act of changing ownership. When you sell an animal, when the buyer is pulling it into his property, it becomes his. Or he pulls it in a parking lot, it becomes his. The acquisition, the legal act of acquisition is by pulling an animal. A heavy animal by pulling it. Meshicha. Now in Gemara it says that there are two forms of Meshicha. He beats it with a stick and she is running. It's Meshicha. Or he calls it and she comes to him. It's also a Meshicha. Huh? He says, during the time of the exile, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pulling us to him, sometimes it's with a stick and it hurts. But when people come by the end of the days, he'll pull us just by calling. Which will call you. That's why it's spelled with an aleph. You know that? It's a jewel. All right. Now, let's go to your question. Your question is about Gemara. Function of Gemara. That is really the question.
Huh? Right. Yeah.
Didn't we discuss something about Mishnah and Gemara recently? We did not. Now, learning, Torah learning, is not only in order to know, to have the information. To learn Hilchos Tefillin, I need the information. If I wouldn't know how Tefillin are and how to put them on, I wouldn't know how to carry out my obligation. So therefore, those are instructions which I have to do in order to carry out my obligation. Huh? But Torah, the function of Torah for the Jewish person is more than that. I think I mentioned already, Ein Mayim Ela Torah, and that Torah is compared to water, the Gemara says. Why water? In Rambam it's mentioned that one of the comparisons to water is because water, when you pull water on an incline, it doesn't stay on top, it goes down. Huh? So the Gemara says, and the Rambam quotes it, Torah does not stay with people who are haughty, people who think about themselves very high, people who brag. Torah is staying with people who are modest, with people who are humble. Are you following this? But there is another comparison. If somebody would ask, what percentage of the human body is water? Is anyone familiar with this? Yeah, some say it's a very high percentage. Huh? Very high percentage. What would happen to a human body if we were dehydrated? He wouldn't die. He would just disappear. Because that's what he is. That's the essence. Torah is our essence. The essence of the Jewish person, the same as water is the essence of the human body, Torah is the essence of the Jewish person. And you will find by experience you will find that study of Torah is inspiring. It has an inspiration. It's not the inspiration of Torah is not just an inspiration, it's reviving. And we feel inspired because we are revived. Is that clear? So Torah is really the essence of the Jewish person. How this is part of the secrets of the creation. The creation is full of secrets. We don't know what is the essence of this. Do we? You'll take it, you'll try to analyze it and take it to smaller parts, to smaller parts, to smaller parts. You come to an atom, right? Do we know what the atom is? I don't think science knows. We have a description. We have a description of a... We have a description of movements of electrons in the atom. Now you know that. But still, what makes it move? What is it? We don't know. Now, which means that the essence is a secret for us. The essence of anything is a secret. As a matter of fact, in the classical literature of classic story like the Chovetz Chaim. Are you familiar with the Chovetz Chaim? Nobody is familiar with that book, Duties of the Heart. That's the Chovetz Chaim. Yeah, that's the period when the Kuzari was written. Yeah. Well, the classic Musar and basic philosophy books, philosophy books, they, their expression for essence is Mahut. Mahus. Mem, Hei, Vav, Sof. And the word Mahus consists of Mahu. What is it? It's a question. So, their expression for essence is a question mark. Because the essence of a thing is the question mark of it. We can dissect it, anything we can dissect, up to a certain, when we come to a certain limit, that's it. From now further, it's already a question. Now, the same question mark is ours. What the Jewish person is, and what the Jewish nation is. The essence is Torah. And we see it. Experience has shown it. Experience has shown that where there is, the less Torah there is, the more deterioration, Jewish deterioration is. Let's say the Jewish community of America. Jewish community of America, it's sure in many, many areas, it's in a state of fast deterioration. That deterioration is being stopped now by some day schools which have been opened in many areas, and now by quellos. You know what a quello is. So now, just for the last, in the last decade, quellos has spread out over America. And they are holding the time. But learning, without learning, is deteriorating. It's a fast deterioration. And in history, we have the same. The Jewish community in Italy became non-significant. The Jewish community in France, until the war almost, was almost nothing, non-significant. It's growing up now with learning. Italy has now learning. Switzerland was deteriorated, and it's growing up right now. It started to grow up even before the war. There was a issue in Montreux. Now in Luxembourg. Now there's a lot of learning in Switzerland. So we know that our essence is learning. Then, so learning is above the practicality of knowing how to perform mitzvahs, of how to live as a Jew. Above this is the need of learning by itself, as a value in itself, not as a value of leading up to something else. Do I make myself clear? As a matter of fact, we say for Shabbos, we say, Kivoy Shavas Mikol Malachtoi Ashabo Elikim Lazis. You remember this? That day, the Almighty has rested from all his work that he created to do further. Lazis, to do further. One of the meanings of that pasuk is that the value of things is outside of them. What's the value of a hammer? You can hit a nail with it. What's the value of the nail? You can, let's say, put together a piece of carpentry. What's the value of the piece of carpentry? Make a bookshelf. What's the value of the bookshelf? You can put books. What's the value of the books? You can learn something from it. What's the value of learning? Here we stop for a minute. If you come to an American concept, what's the value of learning? Well, you learn a skill. What's the value of the skill? You can make a living. What's the value of making a living? You can, and so on and on. Unless it's things which end up with personal satisfaction, nothing has a value in itself. Each one is justified by what it's leading up to. The hammer is justified because it hits a nail. And the nail is justified because it makes a piece of furniture. And the piece of furniture is justified because and the book is justified. You follow what I say? Ashavua elikim la'asis. Everything that Rabbeinu has created, he has created each thing because it produces for the production, for further production. Now, here we are coming to a question. Here we are coming to a very interesting question. If that's the case, nothing is of value. Because if there is nothing which is justified by itself, it's an endless chain which doesn't end. And as long as you don't end with anything that makes sense, nothing makes sense. Take a watch, an old-time watch, an old-fashioned watch. Has wheels, has springs, has screws, right? So, yeah. And as long as you don't end with anything that makes sense, nothing makes sense. Take a watch, an old-time watch. Old-fashioned watch. Has wheels, has springs, has screws, right? So you ask, what's that screw doing? That's who holds a wheel. What that wheel doing? That wheel is moving. So what is it moving? It's moving another wheel. And what's the other wheel moving? It's moving another wheel. Why do you need the last wheel? If the last one is not necessary, the entire chain is valueless. You follow what I say? But then I come out, but it moved the hands. So, from the angle of the watch, everything is justified by the fact that it has the hands. Is that correct? But from my angle, I say, why do I need hands? Why do I need to look time? So it doesn't stop yet. In the machine, it stops. With me, it doesn't stop. I say, why do I have to know the time? So, in order to be at my job, I'll be at my job in time. I wouldn't be late for my job. So why do you need my job for? and so on. And as the illustration of the watch, unless you have the hands on top to explain it, nothing makes sense because it's leading up to something. Nothing makes... You follow what I say? So therefore... Yes, please.
Wouldn't most, like a lot of people in Western civilization today say, well, the end goal is so I can have a good time.
Right.
I mean, then they say, so everything's justified. So it's not an endless change.
Right. That, I mentioned it before, I don't know, that unless you are talking about self-satisfaction, you don't know where the chain ends. Self-satisfaction, by the way, is not a value. It's very interesting. Let's say there's a blizzard outside, and you can't go out. And it's terrible to go out. And somebody puts himself together and runs out in that blizzard, runs for 2 miles, and buys a loaf of bread and brings it to a person who is hungry. was that a nice thing? You feel that it has value. Now, the hungry man, he was himself. He ran in the blizzard for 2 miles to get a loaf of bread. He wants to eat. Would you say that his action had a value? It was practical. But that's nothing that you had imagined for. Would you?
Don't we? What about preservation of life?
Yeah, I understand. But still, it's very interesting that the same action, if I do it selfless, I have a feeling that there is a value to it. If I do it for myself, maybe practical, but we don't have a feeling that it's an action of value. That's an action that you should respect a person for. Huh? Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm becoming very old-fashioned in my talking. Because today, I don't think in today's ethics of convenience, people wouldn't understand what I'm talking about. But Immanuel Kant, he says that a feeling of respect, that we feel respect for something, it's the touchstone of values. You know what's the touchstone? Pierre de Touche. You know that? Huh? The thing that you... It's an instrument to, let's say, Let's say here, this. You see this and you don't know. Is it full of nothing or is it full of valuables? And you can't open it. But you have an instrument which you pass by and the instrument tells you, you have a Geiger counter. Huh? Pardon? This is a Pierre de Touche, the touchstone. He says, the feeling of respect is the Geiger counter for values. Have you found this? It's very old-fashioned, but it's true.
That's old-fashioned.
Huh?
It's not so old-fashioned.
Today society. I don't know. All right. All right. So, and talking about values, there has to be a place where that chain stops. Because if you don't have the hands outside of the clock, the entire machinery inside is senseless, is worthless. Is that right? Huh? The same should be in our lives. There should place, should stop, the chain should stop. Huh? And the only thing where the chain stops is learning. Because learning is a value in itself. As a matter of fact, we have this. That's Torah, and that's the entire concept of Torah as a value in itself. But if you ask Immanuel Kant, he'll tell you the same. He'll tell you that you feel respect for learning. Which means it's a value in itself. The symbol for this, the Rebbein Shlomo is greater than Shabbos. Shabbos, everything stops. You don't create on Shabbos. It's a step to the chain. Kivui Shabbos Mekor Malachtoi HaShabur Alikim Lach.